Welcome back to the Pesky Report. This is episode 349 of the Pesky Report. We just missed out on the big 350 on a nice round number, but we'll take 349. My name is Derek. Did I say we were presented by Beyond the Monster? I don't know, but if I didn't,
no,
I just
didn't.
Said it now. I just said it now. We were presented by Beyond the Monster. I almost forgot, but I didn't. Back in mid-season form, my name is Derek. I'm here with Jake and Hunter. I am back in my traditional role here. As I did not go on a trip to Worcester this week, as they were not at home, but maybe next week, we have a lot to talk about, though. We want to keep the show somewhat timely. We are working on that, so we are going to kick things off with Double A, with the Portland Sea Dogs. They did go 2-4 this week against the Hartford Yard Goats, but there are a lot of impressive performances, you could say. And I think the main one we want to talk about is Blaze Jordan, who was Eastern League Player of the Week and had a big week, including going 12 for 27 with 4 doubles, 2 homers, and 8 RBIs. Overall, really big week for him. I'll hand it over to Jake first, as is tradition. Jake, what are your thoughts on Blaze Jordan's week?
I mean, Blaze is on fire, and it's great to see. Like you said, 2 homers this week, 4 doubles. He only struck out twice, which is great to see. It certainly small sample sizes all around, but this is obvious. This has been like the tale of 2 seasons so far for Blaze. First 8 games this year, his slash line was 103, 206, 172. So not what you want, but now he's in the midst of a 9-game hitting streak. And over the course of those 9 games, he's at 385, 390, and 641. So, and I think for him, always the key, as it is with all these guys, is keep the strikeouts down. You know, good swing decisions, catching up to pitches. I think that last year there were issues about, you know, how was Blaze Jordan going to do in terms of his ability to catch up to higher level pitching. I think he definitely struggled at times last year after he was promoted to Portland. But so far this year, it's up and down. But right now, he certainly is the direction is pointing upward. I find it interesting that they have not really settled on a position for him where he is playing pretty equally between first base and third base. I think he's looked pretty good overall defensively. I would say that first base certainly seems like it's going to be his long-term position. And it's kind of a funny thing to think about offensively with him, where the question has been, is he going to hit enough to justify being a first baseman? Which, if you think about Blaze Jordan's, you know, background and his history, it's funny that we're sort of questioning whether he was going to be like a power hitter enough or hit for enough power, when the whole reason why anybody ever knew who he was when he was like 13 years old was because he was such a prodigious power hitter for his age. But it's just kind of funny how development goes once you become a professional. So the 2 homers this week, 12 for 27, 641 slugging percentage the last 9 games. Things are looking good for him. But, you know, will he maintain that, you know, when they go back to Portland? We'll see. But after getting off to a rough start, you got to love seeing Blaze have a week like he just had.
Yeah, as you mentioned, 9-game hitting streak at the moment, and you said 103 batting average through those first 8 games. Something I was very adamant on was the miserable luck that Blaze Jordan and Cutter Coffey in High A had been getting. It was getting comical seeing both of them just consistently make good contact and get robbed of hits, or just, you know, a hard line out right to someone, diving play, a leaping play, whatever it was. But there was clear signs that Blaze Jordan wasn't really struggling as nearly as badly as a 103 average looked. He, like, to this point in the season through 17 games, he's only struck out 7 times. He's been putting the bat on the ball. He's been making good contact. It was just a lot of bad luck, and we're starting to see that turn around. He's still, for the most part, clobbering the ball. I do think he had like 1 infield single this week. But for the most part, it's been really hard hit balls, 6 doubles, 2 homers, up to a 265 average. So it's just, that goes to show you how you really shouldn't judge someone off a couple games. Like, all of a sudden he's back to a really solid average in Double A. And as for the defense, I'm I will still say I think Blaze Jordan is a very solid defensive first baseman, but he continues to look solid at third base too. He made a couple really good plays this week. One, like a charging play on a weak ground ball. He made a nice throw. He does have an absolute cannon, which plays phenomenally at third, which would go a little bit to waste at first. But I've consistently seen him take errors away from his teammates at first. But this is just, it's such a stacked team, and to see and to hear all week Blaze Jordan be the star. I mean, the Portland team has, you know, the big three. It has Nick York. It has Matthew Lugo, who's been on a heater all year. It has Edinson Paulino, who's been awesome. And the main person that Hartford's broadcast talked about this week was Blaze Jordan. Every time he came up, it was, oh, this, you got to watch out for him. He's been killing us. And then I don't remember if it was Sunday or Saturday, but I think it was Sunday. In his first at bat, he hit one like 365 right to the wall, like, give it another 2 feet and it's a home run. And then his next at bat, he hits a single. Then his next at bat, he hits a single. So we're really just seeing Blaze Jordan at his best. He's just absolutely locked in right now. And it's just a 5-game series or a 6-game series. Sorry. But the 12 for 27 is pretty damning in my opinion of how terrifying he can be when he's locked in. And I mean, it is a 9-game hitting streak. Like, that's getting into very impressive territory. So I just, with all the heavy hitters in the Portland lineup, Blaze Jordan's still able to shine as like this terrifying bat in a lineup of heavy hitters.
I will say his is funny because his on base percentage was lower than his batting average this week, which I always find hilarious because it feels like my MLB The Show stat line because I have zero plate discipline and swing at everything. And I don't strike out a ton. I'm like Rafaela in terms of my plate discipline and MLB The Show. I swing at everything and I make a decent chunk of weak contact because of it. I don't know. Maybe my vision is just good. I don't know. But I thought that was funny considering the week. Because he didn't have any walks. He only struck out 2 times, though. But, like, I mean, you go 12 for 27. Am I going to really nitpick on the fact that he didn't walk? Like, really? I'm not going to do that. He had a 1244 OPS this week. That's a big old number for Blaze Jordan. I think overall, I think he's interesting too. And this, obviously, you touched a little bit on Hunter defensively. It's first base, is it third base? I mean, you look at those positions in the big leagues, and they both have two guys there who are very likely. I mean, Devers is going to be there for a long time, and very likely Casas is too. So for Blaze, there are discussions of, I don't know, maybe a left field or something. I don't know. I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm just saying it's interesting to note that his two positions right now are first base and third base, and you kind of start looking towards the big leagues, and they're obviously blocked. Now, that's a problem you figure out when it arises. That's not a worry right now, but I bring that up as like a, you know, what happens with him because of that fact that he plays first base, third base, both are already covered long-term in the big leagues. It's not a bad problem to have. These are the type of problems that we look at and we go, these are good problems to have. The more talent you have, the better. And the Red Sox are kind of in that spot right now with a decent chunk of guys where it's, you know, their position is up for grab or not up for grabs. There's a little bit of a question mark, whether it's because of defensive concerns or defensive concerns mixed in, maybe with the fact that those positions already have guys long-term at the big league level or whatever it is, not a bad problem to have at all. If Blaze Jordan hits, he's going to be a big leaguer, whether it's with the Red Sox, whether it's with someone else, he will be a big leaguer. And I think the fact that he's proven that at the very least, he's going to be a solid defensive first baseman, could maybe even be decent defensively at third base. He has a very bright future ahead of him, as does like this entire Portland team, because they're insane. But I mean, I can't add too much more than what you guys said. You guys kind of covered it all. But like I said, I think that's something to keep in mind too. Looking more way down the road, I didn't want to bring that up. Another guy, and I also want to use that to segue too into another guy who positionally, who knows, up in the air a little bit, is getting some run in left field, which is nice to see. Adds some positional versatility. Nick York went 7 for 20 this week, couple doubles, couple homers. Big week for Nick York. I think he's had. Nick York kind of has this dark cloud over him right now, I feel, in some senses, because he's not part of the big three, per se. And he was in AA last year. Why is he not in AAA? But if he hits like he's been, like he hit this past week, those questions aren't going to be an issue. Obviously, part of the reason he's not in AAA is he can't play third base. Chase Mydroth can play third base. That's why Mydroth kind of is there too in some sense. Not that Mydroth doesn't deserve it. He definitely does. But I think Nick York's kind of positionally also too, if they want to get him to play left field, it's not bad to keep him in AA. Let him learn left field in AA before you move him up to AAA. But overall, Nick York's another like a guy who I don't even want to say his stock has fallen necessarily, but almost like he's in this weird spot where it's like his stock relative to the Red Sox system has dropped because there's so many talented players in the system that are just have had great years last year or this year are starting to have good years. And it's with York, he's just kind of been steady, right? And not in a bad way. There's nothing wrong with being steady, but he hasn't had like the insane year that guys like a Roman Anthony, for example, have had, right? Overall, I think when I look at Nick York, I'm looking at a guy who, you know, obviously the bat's really going to depend what happens with him because, let's be honest, he is more of a bat-first guy, so he kind of needs the bat. But we talked about it time and time again with Nick York. He was not struggling defensively at second base, and I want to continue to say that. No issues defensively at second base in terms of, you know, people having question marks there. That's not an issue. That's not why he's playing left field. It's playing left field really to grow positional versatility. But overall, too, like with Nick York, like I said, he's had a really good week. I don't have any issues with him. There's no defensive issues why he's playing left field. I just want to clarify that for probably the 50 millionth time that we've clarified that Nick York is not bad defensively. But I think he's another guy who had a very good week this week in Portland.
Yeah, and so I'd like to take this opportunity to complain about someone's complaining. So there's somebody on Twitter that I'm not going to say their name. They get in my mentions and they get in other people's mentions complaining a lot about the fact that in 2020, the Red Sox picked Nick York instead of taking Pete Crow Armstrong. And this came up quite a bit. This came up this past week, obviously, because the Red Sox played the Cubs and Pete Crow Armstrong played in a bunch of those games. Of course, Pete Crow Armstrong was picked by the Mets and the Mets traded him for Javier Baez for 2 months, which is a whole other discussion.
Yikes.
I feel like there is, and we're going to, as we get closer to the MLB draft, the draft is going to be, is about 2.5 months away. And there's, you know, there's been some mock drafts and things that are coming up. I don't understand. And this also, there was a question in the most recent Sox Prospects podcast with Ian and Mike Andrews, the co-founder, where somebody asked a question about why did the Red Sox pick Mikey Romero when they needed outfielders and in 2022. And the question about why did you pick this person versus this person in the MLB draft is very different than almost than every other draft. And it's because of the fact that there are that everything is based on what your bonus pool is. And Ian answered the question about Mikey Romero by saying, if the Red Sox took Drew Gilbert, or who they had been rumored to have been taken, who is now with the Mets and is probably going to play the position that Pete Carl Armstrong should be playing, but that's a whole other thing. You know, if they took him, they would probably have to give him full slot. Well, if they have to give him full slot, guess what? They're not going to be able to draft Roman Anthony because that's how it goes. So yes. In 2020, the Red Sox had that was a weird draft. Remember, it was only five rounds. The Red Sox only had four picks because they lost their second round pick because of the sign stealing thing. So they had a smaller bonus pool than basically every other team. And if they had, and Pete Crow Armstrong was selected two picks after the Red Sox pick, but he signed for full slot. If the Red Sox had taken him, he would have asked for a full slot at the 17th pick. Instead, they took Nick York, who took like, I think, $600,000 under slot.
$900,000.
There you go. Thank you. Or at least it was like $700,000 less than what Pete Crow Armstrong signed for two picks later, I think. And so doing that is what allowed the Red Sox to take Blaze Jordan in the third round and also let them take, you know, Jeremy Wu Yelland, who was under slot, and then Shane Drohan, who was over slot. Obviously, the Red Sox let Shane Drohan go in the Rule 5 draft. But you can't just look at every pick in the draft in a vacuum. And if the Red Sox had decided in the 2020 draft to take Pete Crow Armstrong and give him slot, in a draft where they were missing their second round pick and only had three other picks, you're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle with the rest of the picks. You have to pray that those other guys are going to sign for slot. You're basically going to, everyone's going to have to, you're going to have to only draft guys who are going to take slot or less. So you put and all, you put all your eggs, you put all your eggs in Pekar Armstrong signing and B, him turning into a good player. Otherwise your draft is going to fucking blow. So I don't want to hear any more about the, about this Pekar Armstrong thing.
And like, that's when their farm system stunk. Let's, like, exactly. Michael Chavis was like your top prospect in 2019. Like, or like, who was their top prospect at like time of the draft? It might have been like Casas, but even then, Casas, like, yeah. Casas wasn't at the peak he was at in terms of minor league rankings.
It was a super young, unproven Casas because the farm system was that bad that they were just like, this guy might be good in 3 years.
Yeah.
So,
well, also, anyway. I'll also add on the Roman Anthony point. Roman Anthony got a higher bonus than Mikey Romero.
Than Mikey, exactly.
Who was the first round draft pick. That's also a point to make.
So obviously, like, it would be great if you had Pekar Armstrong here. Like, it would be great. And because he's a really good prospect and he's a great outfielder and he's fast. He's like a kind of like more or less a five tool guy. But you can't just look at any one pick in a vacuum. It's like, you know, like 28 teams passed on Mike Trout, or in like 35 teams passed on Aaron Judge. Like, this shit happens in the draft. And it's like, okay, anyway, Nick York had a good week. Cool. Hunter, you talk now.
That was a long way to get to just throw out Nick York had a good week at the end. I do just want to mention Matthew Lugo still killing the ball, 11 game hitting streak. He's gotten a hit in 12 of 14 games this year, and one of those games was one where he had one at bat before leaving with an injury. So at this point, it's very early in the season, but I'm already seeing a lot of like, at what point does he get moved up? And it's just kind of one of those things where you need to remind people, he's still 22 years old, struggled heavily last year. I don't want to say he's moved to a new position because he played some left last year, but it seems like he's like exclusively left field at this point. So I wouldn't be too shocked if he got promoted at some point, but also don't be surprised if he's still in AA for a little bit longer. And then pitching wise, I think that Portland had a bunch of really good weeks. The bullpen struggled, except for Ryan Zephyrjohn hasn't given up an earned run yet. He's 9 2/3 innings. He has 0 ERA and 15 strikeouts, only 2 walks. Jonathan Brand made his AA debut, 2 shutout innings. And then the starters had a bunch of good weeks. I'll let you guys talk about some of them, but I'll just quickly throw out Angel Bastardo had his best start of the year. Six scoreless innings, didn't walk anyone, only allowed 3 hits, struck out 5 batters. Bastardo's been phenomenal this year. 2.89 ERA, a 1.11 batting average against, and a 0.86 whip. Bastardo's one of those guys that, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere last year, but he kind of really rose his stock last year. And it got to the point where he was Portland's opening day starter this year. So clearly the Red Sox see a lot in him, and he's only proven their point so far.
Yeah. I'll just quickly mention, yeah, like Wickelman Gonzalez had a great start, and it's kind of funny to see. It feels like he's going through the same sort of pattern that he went through last year, where he was just like really bad at the start of the year. And then it's like right around the end of April, beginning of May, it's like something clicks and he just starts to look really good. And maybe we talked last week about how he pitched out of the bullpen one day. Maybe he found something clicked in the for that, and he looked good there. And then,
and we also said not to worry about that.
Yeah. We said not to worry about it. You should listen to us sometimes, but yeah, you know, 8 strikeouts in 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 1 hit. You gotta love to see that for him.
Yeah, definitely. Other thing too, I do want to shout out Hunter for talking about the Matthew Lugo revenge tour. Because that's fully underway. I think Hunter gets the reference. We got to talk about Marcelo Meyer. I mean, we can't not talk about Marcelo Meyer. I mean, he had a good week again, as is customary. It feels like 7 for 22, 2 doubles, homer, 3 walks, just 5 strikeouts. He also stole a base. Overall, good week for Meyer. Edinson Paulino, I was hoping for the Paulino breakout year last year. Didn't necessarily happen. I'm still hopes are still set on it. Hopefully happening this year. I know he ended last year better than he started last year. So that was kind of some hope. He went 7-for-23 this week with a trio of doubles. And then Hunter Dobbins had a nice little start, 6 innings. Did give up 2 runs, but 6 innings, like, you're not gonna complain about a guy only giving up 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, just 3 walks. And Helkers Oliveras had only gave up 1 hit in 5 innings. He did walk 5 guys, so that's been kind of the thing with him. The walks have been definitely up there, but went 5 innings, only gave up 1 hit and 0 runs. I mean, you can't really complain. Obviously, you'd like to see the walk slower, but at the same time, if he's not allowing runs, you know, there are some pitchers who just walk a lot of guys, right? But if they're still effective, you know, if it works for them, it works for them. It's not ideal. But if it's going to work for Oliveras, I mean, you can't really complain. He puts up a start, like, if he can put up a start, only gives up a couple runs, even if he walks a few guys. Like I said, not ideal, but you get the job done. Some guys get it done like that. However you get it done, I guess. Whoever floats your boat, like I said, not ideal, but it's worked out for him. Overall, I did also want to touch on Roman Anthony didn't have a great week, but it wasn't as bad as last week. So, I mean, step in the right direction. And Kyle Teal, although he didn't have a great week either, he still drew some walks, got on base. So that's nice to see. Even if the bat's not necessarily working during the week, drawing walks, getting on base, nice to see.
So yeah, just for Anthony, he had a lot fewer strikeouts this past week. So that was huge for him.
Yes. I didn't know if he was going to strike out 13 times last week.
It was like 13 times in 24 at-bats he struck out last week.
Yeah, that was rough. This past week, it was only, I think, 5, which a lot better than 13.
Much better.
Which is good. You know, a couple rough weeks for him, but we always say this about player development. It's not linear. Guys aren't just going to rise straight up. You're going to have some rough patches. A little bit of a rough patch here for Anthony the last couple of weeks, but
yeah, it's important to remember with him. He's still 19 years old, and he doesn't even have 162 games in his minor league career. Like, excuse the 19-year-old for slumping a little bit in Double A. Like, it's easy to forget how young and inexperienced he is because of how quickly he became a star prospect.
People are trashing on Jackson Holliday because he had a rough week and a half in the big leagues, and then he got sent down to Triple A, and it's like, the kid's 20 years old. Like, we're in almost a similar situation with Roman Anthony these last couple of weeks where he struggled. It's like, he's 19 years old. He's in Double A. How many 19-year-olds are in Double A?
He's going up against like 25-year-old pitchers. Like,
unless they're in like the Padres organization or the Angels, like, there aren't many, right? Yeah. Those organizations are a little cuckoo, a little crazy. The Red Sox aren't like that. You don't really see a 19-year-old in Double A for the Red Sox. So the fact that Roman Anthony's in Double A, and, you know, the success he had last year, he's fine. Couple rough weeks, but it's only a couple weeks. We have a however long season and a lot of games ahead. So there's no concern with Roman Anthony. Just wanted to bring up, even though I didn't have a great week, still an improvement from, you know, the week before, and working in the right direction, I guess, with that. I think that's all I have for Double A. Anyone else have anything they want to add before we move on? All right, cool. We are now going to take our trip from Portland all the way to Greenville, where the Greenville Drive played Greensboro, where they went 3-3. Tyler Miller won South Atlantic League Player of the Week, right? Am I correct on that? Yes, I am. Okay, perfect. So Tyler Miller won South Atlantic League Player of the Week. He had a big week. He went 9-for-18, a couple doubles, homer. 1 walk, no strikeouts for him this week. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that you're playing well, I don't know what does. So I'll give it over to you, Hunter. What are your thoughts on Tyler Miller's week?
I've always been a big fan of Tyler Miller. There was actually a kid on my Little League teams growing up named Tyler Miller. He was the best catcher in the league. It's one of the things my dad and the other coach would always say was he was our biggest advantage because he was like the only 12-year-old that could consistently throw kids out at second base trying to steal. So after, you know, 2 steal attempts, teams would just stop trying to steal on us. So the second the Red Sox drafted a guy named Tyler Miller, I was like, oh, this guy, I gotta be all in on him. And he's kind of sneakily been really good for them since he's joined the system. hits for a decent amount of power. He's not fast, but he's good on the base paths. He can get steals. He's a corner infielder slash outfielder. I think he's a phenomenal defensive first baseman. I think that's the position that he should stick at, and I think he's going to crush it there if he gets a chance. And he's always been, again, he's always been like a solid hitter, but this week he really just kind of took it to the next level. Hit in all five games, two separate three-hit games. He's up to a 305 average on the year. He's got a 492 slugging. He's hit five doubles and two homers. He's someone that I feel like always has timely hitting. It seems like whenever Greenville needs a hit, they have, you know, a guy on third. He's going to find a way to bring him in. It might be a ground out to second. It might be a sac fly, or he's going to, you know, get a double. But he tends to bring home the run. He tends to do what Greenville needs. And I think he's just kind of been one of the unsung guys in their system for, you know, 2 years now. A little bit older. I think he went, I want to say he went to Alabama, but don't quote me on that.
Auburn.
Thank you. I had
SEC A
teams in my
that close enough.
The Alabama fans and Auburn fans will be very
mad. Yeah, I'm sure. Nobody tell Tyler Miller.
Charles Barkley's going to come after you.
But just always seems to be the guy for them over the last 2 years, and it's just great to see him have a week like this where he's going to get a little bit of national recognition and a lot of Boston recognition. It's fun to see a guy like that get the flowers he deserves.
Yeah, I'm definitely also a fan of him. I think he's possibly, you know, the best defensive first baseman in the entire system. I think with Tyler Miller, it's kind of just an unfortunate case where he's blocked, you know, from going higher up sooner. He is 24 years old. And yeah, he played at college. He played at an SEC school. But yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the likes of Blaze Jordan and, you know, Alex Benellis and Matthew Lugo and, you know, the other guys that are up there in Portland, I would feel like Tyler Miller would be in Portland at this point, but he's just gotta keep getting out there every day and doing his thing. And, you know, hopefully his number will get called sooner rather than later to move up to Portland. Cause I think he's earned it. And obviously if he keeps having weeks like this week where he's, you know, 9 for 18 and not striking out, then he is, you know, they're not really doing him any favors keeping him there. So hopefully this is, he is not going to have to stay in high A for too much longer.
Yeah, definitely. And we talk about defense. I'm a very big fan of defense. I'm also a very big fan of Alan Castro, and he had a good week as well. 8 for 20, couple doubles, 4 RBIs, 2 walks with just 4 strikeouts this week. Feels like his bat's finally getting going, which is nice to see. Obviously, he's been drawing walks like a maniac the first few weeks of the season, but getting his bats going, nice to see. Hayden Mullins, Reyes Perales, and Juan Daniel Encarnacion, who Jake might call Edwin based on last week's show.
Shut up, Derek.
I believe it was Eduardo.
Eduardo.
He called Elmer Rodriguez Cruz Eduardo.
That's right.
Yes. That's why I said
he might call
Juan. For reminding everyone.
Edwin.
Yeah.
But no, the trio of them all had good starts. Miguel Agüero also had a good, I think, is it Ghetto? Whatever you say it, whatever. My pronunciation's not good enough anyways.
Guido.
Yeah, whatever. Close. I was close enough. We're back to my name pronunciation issues. Well, wait till we get all to the FCL and DSL guys. That'll be a nightmare. But no, those Seattle side had a good week as well. Do you guys want to talk about any of the pitchers this week? Like I said,
I'll just mention. Yeah, Luis Perales sat for a couple of weeks. I think it was an oblique thing. I can't remember exactly, but he basically didn't make a start for like 2 weeks. So they kind of easing him back in a little bit. And yeah, he had a really good start. He was 4 innings, 3 hits, just 1 earned run, 1 walk and 7 strikeouts. So you'll take that.
I think the run was actually unearned. I think they went back and changed it because it should have been unearned, but they called it earned. And I think they fixed it.
There you go. So no earned runs given up for Perales. And then, yeah, it was a interesting, also good week for guys like Caleb Bolden, Jonathan Brand, who've moved, you know, and then also I wanted to mention, I just want to make sure, I just wanted to mention Bryce Bonin also, who has missed a bunch of time with injury. He was out the entirety of last season because he had a rotator cuff injury, which is not good for for pitchers. It's kind of interesting. I remember when I was growing up, rotator cuff was sort of the injury that would happen a lot. And I think there's been a lot of advancements with shoulders and strengthening shoulders and making sure that rotator cuffs don't get injured. And now, obviously, it's the ligament injuries in the elbow, which you can't strengthen a ligament. So this is the whole reason why we have this whole this whole problem. But anyway, Bryce Bonin missed all of I'm going to try to pronounce it correctly. Bonin. It's pronounced Bonin, according to Sox Prospects. Thank you. He was the Red Sox did sign him as a minor, or I think they re-signed him as a minor league free agent. They signed him as a minor league free agent this year after he missed all of last year. And he had a pretty good week this past week. So definitely a name to watch. He's older too for the level. He's 25, but we'll see what we get out of him going forward. But that's a name to just to pay attention to there.
Yeah, just on the hitting side, quick. You mentioned Mel Guido, Miguel Aguedo. Finished last season only hitting .216, but he had an awesome month of June. I think he hit like .280 or something like that in June. He really seemed to be figuring it out, and then he got injured, missed the rest of the year. He's up to .316 this season. He's on a 4-game hitting streak. He's been awesome. He's someone that the Greenville announcers tend to talk a lot about how clear the growth is this year. Juan Chacon is on a 12-game hitting streak right now. I feel like that needs to just be thrown out there. 4 doubles and a triple. He's only hitting .259 on the season, which, I mean, that's definitely not bad, but I think if you saw a 12-game hitting streak early in the season, you might think a little bit higher. But for the most part, he's been fantastic. Just obviously keeps getting on base every game. Cutter Coffey, as I mentioned earlier, has been in the same boat of Blaze Jordan, where he was just getting a lot of bad luck at the start of the season. That's started to go away. He's up to .219. He's been a fun leadoff guy for them. He seems to really be turning it around lately. Did hit his first home run this week, went right for the apartments in Greenville. So I'm sure we'll see a lot of those this year. And then you mentioned in passing Juan Daniel Encarnacion. He had the 5 scoreless innings this week, 3 hits, struck out 6 batters, didn't walk anyone. He had a really bad start in his first start of the year, and he's been phenomenal since then. Obviously this was his best start of the year, but just really seems to be figuring things out. And then David Sandlin he's looked so much better than the numbers. Like if you watch the game compared to just looking at the stats, they tell 2 completely different stories. But this week he gave up 2 runs in the first. I think he gave up a leadoff homer and then like walked a guy, gave up a double, got an out, gave up a run, got an out, got out of the inning. So he gave up 2 runs in the first and then was nails the next 3 innings, struck out 5, only walked 1. So that was his best start of the season. And even though 4 innings, 2 runs doesn't look great, clear progression, again, a lot better than the numbers show. I mean, it was really just a couple mistakes in the first inning, and then he really locked things down. I think he's going to turn things around pretty quickly. He's got a 6.75 ERA right now, but I think we'll see him. I think we'll see his numbers dip in the right direction heavily over the next few weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a great place to ramp up on high and move on to low A, move on to Salem, who went 3-3 this week versus Carolina, who is Milwaukee's low A affiliate. There were some very solid performances this week. I think we should start with Nizan Zanatello. He went 4-for-8 this week, inside the park homer. I think it was only 9 plate appearances, but a 14.31 OPS. So, I mean, if you don't care for the sample size, that's very fun, a very fun number to look at. I'll hand it over to you, Jake. What are your thoughts on Zanatello?
Yeah, I just think the fact that his first professional home run was an inside the park home run kind of tells you it's just the perfect thing for somebody like Nizan Zanatello, just in a bunch of different ways. The first is that he's incredibly athletic, just electric athleticism. And it's, you know, we didn't get to see it the first few weeks of the year because he was, coming back from this, I think, hamstring injury. And it was very strange that they never put him on the IL. It seemed like it was just going to be a couple days, but it took almost it was like 3 weeks before he actually played. And then also just the fact that he hit a home run means that it shows that he also, and it is true that he has really interesting raw power potential. And it seems like he's getting a lot of run at shortstop so far. My understanding was I thought they were also going to try to work him in at center field a bit too, you know, kind of giving him the Sedan Rafaela treatment, I guess. Although I don't certainly want to put his defense at that level, but Zanatello is one of the most exciting people to come through the Red Sox system in a long time in terms of his sheer talent and combination of athleticism. And so if I would just say that it's really something that right now, and we'll talk about, at least I'll bring him up later, you know, having him and Miguel Blaise in the same is pretty special in terms of just like the all around athleticism and capabilities of some of these prospects in the Red Sox system. So good for Zanatello to get out there in general, and then to, you know, have his first home run be something like pretty memorable. And it was, you know, I would say that the ball that he hit, it, you know, the right fielder tried to make it was one of the situations where the right fielder tried to make a play on it and he didn't. And it was just obvious that as soon as he didn't make the play on it, that it was going to at worst be a triple and most likely an inside the park home run, just because of the way that the field was there. So, yeah, it still, no matter what, it was impressive, to see, him able to put his athleticism on display like that.
Yeah. And Nizan's clearly one of those guys that, if you're an outfielder, you probably shouldn't take the risk on him. You should probably just let the ball drop and say he'll get a double, maybe, or a single, maybe a hustle double. But if that ball gets by you, unless someone was playing elite backup defense, that's an inside the park homer 99 out of 100 times. Derek, you mentioned he had 9 plate appearances this week. It doesn't seem like a lot, but he had 2 plate appearances all of last season before going down with an injury. So we're already seeing more Nizan than we saw last year. And that was absolutely heartbreaking last year, because he was someone that I think everyone was just incredibly excited about. Even if, like, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, he's the best prospect in the system or anything, but he was immediately one of the most exciting prospects in the system with the speed and the athleticism. Like, he just seemed like someone that was must-watch TV. He would do something in the field or do something offensive-wise. That, I mean, he went 1-for-2 last year, and his one hit was a weak grounder to the pitcher. Like, the speed's unreal. So the fact that we ended up not getting to really see him last year was devastating. And then they made us wait a little bit longer than we thought we would to see him this year. So just a phenomenal early impression by Nizan, like you said, 4-for-8 with the inside the park homer and a walk. And yet he's played, I think he played in 3 games, 2 he was shortstop, 1 he was DH. So that was something I was a little surprised by too. I think he DH'd his first game and then he played short the next 2. Not just that, as Derek said, that there was the discussion of putting him in center, but the fact that they already trust him enough to put him at shortstop and not just kind of DH him the first few games tells me that there's no concerns about health, especially considering there's like 47 people on this roster that could, I feel like there's like 47 people on this roster that could play shortstop. So clearly they feel he's fine and they want to give him the reps there, and just excited to see what he can do in this lineup, excited to see him finally be healthy and get a chance to show off the defense, show off the offense, show off the speed, and pairing him with players like Miguel Blaise, with Marvin Alcantara, with Fraile Encarnacion. And like, there's just a ridiculous amount of talent in this lineup, and he immediately becomes a top 2 most intriguing player on this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything you guys said on Zanatello. I'm going to move on to the rotation with Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, Matt Duffy, Jedickson Paez, Blake Wehunt, is it?
Yes. Chicken Man.
And Luis Cohen, all 5 of them. Rodriguez Cruz, Duffy, Paez, Wehunt, and Cohen all had starts. They all went 5 innings. And they all, at the most, gave up 1 run. Rodriguez Cruz, ERC, went 5 innings, gave up 1 run. Duffy went 5 innings, he also gave up a run. Paez went 5 innings, gave up a run. And then Wehunt and Cohen went 5 innings, giving up no runs. Cohen actually had the most weird start because he only struck 1 guy out. He also walked 3 and hit a batter, but hey, no runs is no runs. They also all gave up 4 or less hits as well. So that was nice to see. But I do want to touch on Elmer Rodriguez Cruz because he obviously, five innings, he only gave it 3 hits, 1 run. 7 strikeouts, though, just the 1 walk. He did hit a batter as well. But depending on how you look at it, you could say hitting a batter is efficient because you don't throw as many pitches as you would if you were to walk a guy. So depending on how you want to look at it, you could say it was an efficient use of his pitches by hitting a batter instead of walking him. Probably not the way to look at it, but depends if you want to be positive, I guess. But I say it because we've talked a little bit about him and his, you know, potential, his stuff uptick, I guess, shall you say. And that's a guy, and he's a guy who you look at kind of the stuff uptick, I think. I don't know. We had the discussion about the Red Sox pitching development last week where I kind of brought it up with the pitching development. And we see a guy like ERC who did pitch in low A last year, obviously, looked good in low A. But there were questions about his stuff, you know, how is his stuff going to transform as he moves up the ladder in the minor leagues? How is this stuff going to play? And with the stuff uptick, as you know, it's sticking so far this year, if it continues to stick and it's a permanent thing, I think we start looking at ERC with the stuff uptick and go, okay, there's a guy here, not just a guy who's promising, but now we've had the stuff uptick. He's continued to perform well in low A. He eventually gets moved up to high A, hopefully, and continues to perform well there. And then you're looking at a guy who it's like as good as we thought of Elmer Rodriguez Cruz after last season and even going into last season. I think we're at a point with him where we might be even higher on him now, potentially due to this velo increase that he has. With the velo, he has to control it. That's a big thing. But like the start, only 1 walk, did hit a guy, but like I said, could classify it as being more efficient with your pitches instead of walking him. So only takes 1 pitch to hit a guy. It takes 4 to walk a guy at the minimum. So depends on how you look at it, I guess. But overall, I did want to kind of single him out of the starter group because he did have a good week. And with the stuff uptick and the pitching development that we had the discussion on last week, I think he's someone that needs to be – you need to keep an eye on, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of how to word it properly.
For me – Jedickson Paez just continues to be one of the most intriguing arms in the system. This year, his big problem has been batting average against people are hitting three. The batters are hitting 310 against him, which is a little bit of an issue. But in 14 innings, he's only walked 2 people, which that's kind of the MO of Jedickson Paez. He walked 12 people in 84 and a third innings last year. So, I mean, this is a pattern with him. He does not walk people, but the big thing has been he has 17 strikeouts in those 14 innings this year, and that has not been something he's done. He's never averaged 9 Ks per 9 innings. Last year he had 73 strikeouts in 84 and a third. The closest he ever came was back in 2021 in the DSL. He had 49 strikeouts in 50 and a third innings. So this year he's actually over 9 Ks per 9 innings. So that's something that to keep an eye on. Clearly he's figured a little bit of something out there. We're seeing him strike out people. Like last game in the 5 innings, he struck out 5 people. He's had five. So his first start was 4 innings, 5 strikeouts. Second start was 5 innings, 7 strikeouts. This start, 5 innings, 5 strikeouts. So he's consistently gotten people out. It's not like he just had one big game and is kind of piggybacking off of that. So the bat to ball is a bit of an issue. If he can get that batting average against down a little bit, that'd be great. I'm really not too worried. He's got even with the 310 this year, he's got a career 238. So I don't think that it's as big of an issue as it seems right now. We know he's not going to walk people. If he can keep the strikeouts up, he's going to dominate. I mean, this year he's got a 3.21 ERA, so he's already been very good. But just that the strikeouts, I think, will put him to a whole nother level. And then out of the bullpen, Royman Blanco, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, back before the season when we were doing the preview, he was someone that was intriguing because he's really kind of a two-pitch guy, and he doesn't really have a great fastball. Like he does, it's not like he's hitting like 98 on his fastball or anything, but he was just someone that it was like, if he could add a little bit to the velo,
the breaking ball's good. I forget what they call it. I think like Sox Prospects literally just calls it like breaking ball, or so, like it's, they don't call it like a curveball or anything. And he gave up two runs in his, in one inning in his first appearance of the season. But since then he's been phenomenal. I think he's given up four runs now in 13 innings. So in his next 12 innings, he's given up two runs. He threw three more scoreless innings this week. Seems like he's becoming a trusted arm in that bullpen, and someone that I think could, if he can find this consistency, and obviously I'm not expecting him to throw three shutout innings every week, but if he can continue to build off this season, he was fun to watch in his limited time last year. And I just, there's just something about him that he really feels like someone that could break out, I think. So it's great to see him over these last few weeks really just dominate.
I'll add on him too quick. Because I remember bringing him up in the like preview, team preview like episode, and it's like, oh, this guy spent 4 years in the DSL, and yeah, he's a reliever and was always only a reliever, and he made it states that, like, that's rare, and that doesn't include the 2020 season that got canceled as well. Yeah. So realistically, you could make, he spent four seasons, five total years in the DSL, which is kind of insane. But like I said, then I'll set it now. He's there for a reason, because if there wasn't a reason for him to be there, he wouldn't be there, right? Yeah. So he's there for a reason. Jake, what are your thoughts on anyone here in low A?
I'll just mention Matt Duffy, who was a relatively high pick last year for the Red Sox. He was born in Canada, was a fourth-round pick out of Canisius College. And this last week, you know, he was one of these guys that had a really good start. He had definitely his best start of the season so far. Five innings, three hits, one earned run, six strikeouts. He gave up a home run, but again, no walks. I think a hallmark of his ability in college was limiting walks, where last year he had 100 and I just had it up and I put it away. Here we go. He had 119 strikeouts versus 28 walks last year. And so far this year, for Salem, I believe he has 14 strikeouts versus just four walks allowed. So he's a guy that is not going to blow you away with the fastball, but he has good secondary stuff. And I think that we're seeing, you know, some of his earlier starts this year, he was giving up a lot of hits and giving up some hard contact, gave up a home run in this past start. So he's going to have to figure out his command to make sure that he is, you know, on the corners and not leaving stuff in the middle of the plate. But his stuff is very interesting, and especially his changeup is very interesting pitch. And I think that he's somebody that, you know, because he was a college guy, he might move relatively quickly through the system. But it's great to see this week all of these guys having really good starts. And it kind of just shows the depth that the Red Sox have pitching-wise in their minor league system.
Yeah, definitely. The other two, Max Carlson. I almost said Sam Carlson. I almost said it. That's his brother. That's who's in the Mariners organization. That's not Max. Max Carlson. Hey, at least it was his brother. At least I didn't say like Eduardo Rodriguez Cruz.
All right.
I'm gonna bother you with that for the next couple of weeks. It'll go away eventually. But no, Max Carlson. He pitched in one game where he picked up a two-inning save, where he had five strikeouts, gave up no walks, no hits, no runs. Just, I mean, what else do you want me to say? Like, that's just almost as perfect as you can get. One thing that'd be more perfect is six strikeouts instead of five. But even then, he's a guy throws lit low to mid 90s fastball. We'll see, you know, we'll see if there's any velo increase. Maybe that's something to look out for always. But even if not, like, if topping out a 95, like he's fine with that. He's a three-pitch reliever, although he doesn't really use a slider, so I don't know what the Red Sox have been doing with that in terms of if they're going to scrap it or not, because I haven't watched enough low-A games because they typically play in, like, the middle of the day when I have classes. So shout-out Salem and low-A in general. Even high-A does it, too. They play too many day games in the middle of the week. But it's mostly fastball changeup with him. I think overall, looking at a guy that last year was a 12th round draft pick by the Red Sox out of North Carolina, Now, at North Carolina, he was a starter for the majority of his time. The Red Sox have basically stuffed him immediately into the bullpen. Maybe, like I said, I haven't watched enough low A games this year. Unfortunately, it's the one that's kind of been rough for me to watch this year. So I don't know if the stuff has upticked a little bit in moving to the bullpen. I don't remember if it did last year because my memory is awful. It is, like I said, we have five strikeouts, and when you get six outs and five of them strikeouts, and you don't give up anything else, like at all, don't give up anything at all. It's a good week, even though it was only one appearance. I think overall it's very solid. Do we have anyone else we want to touch on low A before we?
I mentioned this before. I wanted to mention Miguel Blaise, who just didn't really have a huge week. He missed a little bit of time with an elbow contusion. He missed, I don't know how it was. It wasn't a long period of time. He was day to day. Maybe missed four or five games or something.
He played the first game of the series and then the last game. So I think he missed the four games in between.
Yeah. He had two hits in the series overall. I would just point out again, he's not striking out. He's only as a 17.1% strikeout rate on the year, and he has a 245 BABIP. It is definitely Salem effect. He's going to start the hits will start to fall, especially if he does get promoted up to Greenville at some point. No reason to worry about Miguel Blaise. I just wanted to point that out.
I also want to quickly mention Fraile Encarnacion signed the massive signing bonus, 2022, over $1 million, and terrible in the FCL last year, a sub 200 batting average, and he's getting his first taste of single A this year and had a phenomenal week. In all four games he's played in, he's gotten at least one hit, five for 15 with a double and a steal. Another guy that could play shortstop on that team. I think they legitimately have four or five guys that can do it. But just really good to see him get thrown into the fire there and have a really good first week. And hopefully he can build off that.
Yeah. 2022 signing class is a weird one because in terms of their top two signs, you have Framy De Leon and Fraile Encarnacion. Both of them are shortstops. Then you have Johan Fran Garcia, and then Jansel Santana, who got the third highest bonus, and he was in the DSL last year, the last 2 years. He is a shortstop as well. So a lot of shortstops, basically. Three of their four highest signings are shortstop. Not that that's a bad thing. That's typical, for signing 16-year-olds. A lot of them play shortstop. Duh, because they're probably the best players where they are, or at least close to it. But it is interesting because, it's, like you said, Fraile, obviously, he's in low A. Framy De Leon, he's in low A as well. So kind of that signing class is starting. Johan Fran Garcia, obviously, in low A. So that kind of international signing class, Nathaniel Uten, et cetera, Marvin Alcantara, Luis Cohen, those guys are starting to they're making their way into low A and whatnot.
Yeah. And Framy De Leon struggled a little bit this year, but he's looked better the last few games and he's been phenomenal defensively. So he's sticking on the field. He's getting his at bats because he's been Salem's possibly their best defender so far.
Yeah, exactly. So I've seen some of that international signing class kind of come up through and make their way to low A. Now, last but not least level that played this week, is AAA, and the Worcester Red Sox went 2-4 versus the Toledo Mudheads. Overall, interesting week for the Woo Sox, and we're going to start with Chase Mydroth, who Jake, do you want to do the honors on Chase Mydroth? Because I don't know Chase, what is he? What is
Chase,
he again?
Chase Mydroth is a fucking ball player.
Yes.
I mean, I'll just jump in. So basically, he had pretty much the best week in Worcester this past week, 8 for 24. The thing that just always that stands out to me so much about him is the fact that he walks a lot more than he strikes out. He had 4 walks to 2 strikeouts this week. On the season, he has 20 walks to 9 strikeouts. So I will say the only thing I will say about Chase Mydroth is that he only has two extra base hits on the year so far. But he's done the same thing at AAA that he's done at every other level, which is strike out or walk more than he strikes out, puts the bat on the ball, makes things happen, play serviceable defense at three positions, including shortstop, and just, you know, does everything right. And I just think eventually there's a place in the big leagues for a guy like that. Now, his name has come up a bit recently because of some, you know, obviously the Red Sox infield situation has been in flux because of injuries and different things like that. And I've had multiple people in my mentions say, well, why don't they call up Mydroth? First off, easiest answer to that is he's not on the 40 man. And that's, you know, the biggest reason why guys don't get called up is because they would rather exhaust the options of guys that are currently on the 40 man, as opposed to having to bring someone up and start, you know, their clock in terms of their service time and all that. So that's reason number one. And reason number two is that I think that Chase Mydroth should play every day in Worcester. And if he, in considering the fact that the Red Sox are about to have, you know, Garrett Cooper is going to be probably playing most of the time at first base with Bobby Dalbec mixed in there while Tristan Casas is out. Vaughn Grissom, who had a great last week of his rehab in Worcester, it seems very likely that, you know, we're recording this Monday, Tuesday, he's going to be activated to the Red Sox on Tuesday. You know, he's going to be playing every day at second. Sedan Rafaela has really taken over the shortstop job, and Devers is healthy and back playing third base regularly. So I don't know where Chase Mydroth would fit into that mix. And I think the Red Sox are at the point now where, you know, we saw today that Pablo Reyes was DFA'd so that Garrett Cooper could go on the roster. But, you know, guys like Valdez and Hamilton are sticking around. It seems to me like they're okay with, like, David Hamilton being the last guy on the bench in the big leagues and not sort of getting regular at bats in AAA. I think it's likelier that you will see Valdez go down this week once Grissom is activated, just to kind of keep him. It also somewhat, I guess, probably somewhat also depends on what's going on with Masataka Yoshida's health, because he was pulled from the game on Sunday because of a hand issue, I think. And he could go on the IL, and I could see Valdez kind of just, you know, sliding into DHing a lot. But anyway, the long and short of it is everyone knows how I feel about Chase Mydroth, but I just think as far as the big leagues go, like, we kind of have to pump the brakes a little bit. And if he's still at a point in his development where he needs to get at-bats every day. I would rather him get at-bats every day in Worcester than this season coming up to MLB and just being on the bench.
Jake, you said how Chase Mydroth is doing the same thing he did in AA and the same thing he did in High A. And I think the thing that's so crazy about that is it's something that we've seen with him at every level so far. He didn't get a ton of time in Single A. He played there right after they got, right after he got drafted. And then by the next year, he started the next year in High A. But we've kind of seen the same thing of him at every level, where it was like, it was the way of people kind of knocking him down as a prospect. It was like, yeah, well, he's doing it here, but he's not going to be able to do it at the next level because he doesn't have power, and people will just dare him to hit the ball. And, you know, it's, oh, he can do this in High A, but when he gets to Double A, people aren't going to walk around. They're not going to work around him. They're just going to throw him strikes and say, hit the ball, and he's not going to be able to. And then he did it in Double A, and it was the same thing we heard. Oh, but when he gets to Triple A, there's going to be major league pitchers there, and they're not going to play cute with him. They're going to go at him, and he's not going to be able to handle it. And he's handled it every time, every single time he's gotten on. He's walked, you know, people say, oh, he walked a lot because, you know, High A, there's a lot of young guys. They don't have control. He's in Double A with 20 or Triple A with 20 walks in a month, and compared to 9 strikeouts. Like, he fights off pitches. He rarely chases, and he works walks. He gets on base. Yeah. He doesn't have a ton of power. He's got one double and a homer. And he's still got a 283 average a 282 average and a 453 on base percentage. No matter how much people try to say, well, he's not going to be able to do it at the next level, he's done it at the next level. So hearing people, there's very few Chase Mydroth doubters. We've gotten to the point where everybody's like, oh, this guy can clearly play. But it's gotten to the point where there are still some that, it's just white noise at this point. If they're still like, oh, well, he's not going to be able, and I'm not saying he's going to go up to the majors right now and hit and slash 282, 453, 330. I'm not saying that, but clearly he's found what works for him and he's made it work for him. Like, it's not like it's just something that he's doing to get by and, oh, I can hit decent enough in double A with this. He's figured it out. He puts the bat on the ball. He finds open spots in the field. He's got incredible plate discipline, incredible bat control. He's got it all. And it's anyone that's still trying to knock him for the low power at this point is just, it's just noise in the background of me. Cause clearly this guy's a gamer and is going to succeed.
Yeah, definitely. I remember last year, it's like, oh, he's like the, you know, A ball version of Luis Arraez right now. Cause he's like hitting like 400 with like a 500 on base. And it's just like, okay, it's like, what are we doing here? Like, it's like, this is insane. And then like the end of last year in double A was still, I mean, it wasn't in 400, but like he was hitting good. Right. And I'm like, it now we're seeing him in triple A. It's just being Chase Mydrock, you know, a typical Chase Mydrock week this week, 8 for 24, 4 walks, only 2 strikeouts, just being Chase Mydrock. I mean, typical week for him. Other things I want to touch on, Nico Nukes. Hit another nuke. Duh. Obviously, it's Nico Nukes. He went 3 for... This is a Nico Cavadas week. 3 for 12 with a single, a double, and a homer, which was a solo homer. 6 walks and 4 strikeouts. That's just Nico Cavadas for you, which why we love him. If you could put... They need to, like, make bets for players. Like, you can bet whether in each at-bat whether they're going to walk, strike out, or hit a home. Or hit a homer. If they do one of those three, you win, because Nico Cavadas would be like their
greatest. You'd be a billionaire.
Yes. Oh, it'd be amazing. So they should do that. Definitely. Definitely make that a thing. The other thing, Nick Sogard also had a very nice week. I didn't want to talk about him because he went 4 for 13 with a double, but he had 5 walks this week, and that's a guy now with Pablo Reyes gone. You look kind of towards AAA, and I don't think they're calling my job. I don't think they're calling my draft up for the reasons you guys stated. So is Nick Sogard, would he be next up should something happen, you know, or whatnot? Obviously, if they send Valdez down, they could call him up, obviously. But Sogard's getting close now. I mean, without Pablo Reyes there, there's kind of that one. Nick Sogard's kind of the guy who's just kind of sitting there with, you know, he's been good in AAA, but is he not on the 40 man? Is he going to get to the big leagues? I believe Nick Sogard's a big leaguer some way, somehow. He will be a big leaguer. He's almost in the Ryan Fitzgerald spot where it's like the guy plays everywhere, probably is a big leaguer, but just can't get called up for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Nick Sogard kind of feels to be in that same kind of mold of like the guy who's just like, for whatever reason, just kind of stuck in AAA right now, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's good to have a depth guy like a Nick Sogard in your organization. Don't get me wrong. It's great to have a guy like a Nick Sogard sitting in AAA should you need him. But I bring up, too, because like I said, like if Pablo Reyes is gone, if something happens, you never know. Nick Sogard's a guy who they very well could go to, depending on who goes down, if someone goes down. So he's someone to very much keep an eye on, even if you're not the biggest follower of the minor leagues, because one, he's fun. And two, like I said, he's one of those guys who's right on the cusp of being a big leaguer. And the day Nick Sogard becomes a big leaguer, I will be extremely happy. Just like when the day hopefully comes for Ryan Fitzgerald too, even though he's, not with the Red Sox anymore. Hopefully that day comes for both of them, but I didn't want to bring, I did want to bring up Sogard for that reason as well.
I do want to, there's a few other hitters I do just want to quickly touch on. Corey Rozier struggled pretty bad this year, but he had his first really big game in AAA. He went 3 for 4 on Saturday and hit his first AAA homer. Ton of speed, solid defender in the outfield. So hopefully that's something that can kind of get him going, because he could play a big part in Worcester's success this year. Carson Simas started the year at high A, kind of got the Max Ferguson. We saw this with Max Ferguson last year where he was in high A and then got called up to AAA, skipping double A, not because they were like, oh, this guy needs to be in AAA, but because they had a bunch of, like, there was injury issues. There was people getting called up to the majors. There were all these different moving parts. And I guess maybe they think it's better to call up someone from high A to just kind of sit on the bench or like plug in for a game and not really ruin someone's going on with double A, like not throw off their rhythm and be like, hey, we're going to call up Marcelo Meyer for a game and then have him back down. But kind of making it difficult for them to call him to send him back down to high A. He's played in two games. He's 4-for-7 with a walk, 3 runs and a steal. I'm sure they still will when everything gets figured out, but just a really nice, quick triple A debut for Carson Simas. Plays a ton of positions, and just a great overall two games for him. But it's still a very small sample size, but it's one of those things where it's like, it almost feels like, how do you justify calling this guy down that came in and was an immediate spark plug in your offense? And then someone that I've loved for a couple of years now, Eli Marrero, finally got to make his AAA debut this week and went 2-for-10, but his first AAA hit was a homer. And then his second AAA hit was a double. Not known for his hitting. Don't get used to him hitting a bunch of triple or a bunch of doubles and homers, but he's a switch hitting catcher, draws walks, a ton of athleticism for the position. He can get used to, like, he legitimately for Portland in the past would pinch run late in games to steal bases. And it's not like he was just pinch running exclusively for catchers. They would pinch run him for a bunch of different people and have him steal to get in position, or just have him add, because he was a much faster runner than a lot of the other guys out there. And for my money, I've said this for 2-3 years now, top two defensive catcher in the system. It was basically him. And then it was him and Cole Kottom. When Cole Kottom really worked on his defense, I thought he was phenomenal. And then Kottom left, but Kyle Teal came in. So now Kyle Teal's up there. But and you could argue like someone like Enders Olira, but Eli Marrero should always be in that conversation. And it's just great to see him a step away from the majors, getting a chance in AAA and showing out a little bit with the bat as well. He's always going to be great defensively, but showing a little bit of what he can do with the bat. There's a bunch of catchers in AAA right now, so I don't think he would be anything close to the first call-up if the Red Sox had catching problems, but he's still just one step away from the majors, and I think that's great. He's someone that a ton of pitchers have gushed over in the past. Last year when Portland threw a combined no-hitter, I remember Brandon Soluzzi specifically, who, funny enough, got called up to AAA this week and had a great debut, really ranted about how comfortable everybody feels with Eli Marrero back there, how much confidence he gives them. So I just think a professional catcher who I fear isn't ever really going to get a big chance, but I hope he does. And I just love seeing him, him doing big things in AAA.
Yeah, definitely. I was adding to on the Seamus point as well, that with him, even if he gets it down to high A, maybe this is a bid for him to get more playing time in high A as well, because he'd only played in 6 games in high A, so it was also that as well. Jake, do you have anyone else that you want to cover in triple A?
No.
All right. Okay, I will talk about Luis Guerrero quickly, because
Sorry, Jake said no and then left.
Yes.
I was trying to hit the most passive.
I know you didn't mean to, but that was like the most passive. Because no.
The mute button is like right under the remove yourself from the stage button. And I just like moved down a little bit. That was not like a statement. I wasn't like, but no.
Jake's walking out on the show. He's done.
No,
no. But no, Guerrero pitched two games, went 4 innings between those 2 games, just 2 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts. Did walk 3 guys, but over 4 innings, that's fine. Not that big of a deal. And then he did hit a guy. But like I said, depending on how you look at it, might have saved some pitches with hitting a guy instead of walking. It's a free base either way. Let's make that a thing. Hit guys instead of walking them. Saves you some pitches. We're all about pitch count nowadays, you know. If you're going to walk them, you might as well just hit them.
It just might get you charged at on the mound, though. So that's, you know.
That's besides the point. Jake, I think that's good for Triple A. Jake, do you want to talk about having a little FCL / DSL minute?
So, surprise everyone, the FCL and DSL season start on Saturday, May 4th. This is a new thing. The season is starting a month earlier than normal. It makes a lot of sense to have the sort of leagues wrapped up by the time the draft happens. So those seasons will start, we will go back to what we did last year, which is that we'll kind of devote a minute or two or three or however much we decide we need to at the end of each show to talk about some of the big performers. And oh, thanks, Derek. I see what you just did there. So I would just say that the big name, so we're a little in the dark on DSL. I mean, we can talk about some of the guys that signed the bigger bonuses last year, who we would expect to see there. But I would just say FCL, the big name is going to be Yoelis Cespedes, who is number six on the Red Sox, on the Sox prospects top 50, top 60. He will move into the top five probably next week when they update their rankings, because of Zidane Raffaella will have graduated. So guys that saw him in spring training were floored by how he looked in terms of his ability to just put on a show in batting practice, his bat speed. Like, this is the guy to watch. Unfortunately, Sam, who will be on the show in a couple weeks, is not down in Florida anymore, so we will not be getting video from them of the action down there. But hopefully, usually the Red Sox development Twitter account is pretty good about posting videos of stuff that happens. So we'll see him for sure. Starlin Nunez is another name to watch. Franklin Arias. The pitching name that I'll mention is Nicholas Giudice, who came over in the Alex Verdugo trade. So we'll get to see him make kind of his pro debut. And then just a point that we heard this from Chris Hatfield at Sox Prospects, who reported that Yordani Monegro and Mikey Romero will both start rehab assignments there. CJ Liu maybe possibly will, but that's not been confirmed. And we were kind of joking before the start of the show about how Yordani Monegro going up against like 17-year-old FCL kids is just like extremely unfair. And it's also going to be especially extremely unfair if he like does his struts and like is pimping his strikeouts and stuff on these teenagers. Like, ha ha, I got you. I got you, kid who can barely drive.
Just swung at a pitch that hit his ankles. And now he's watching your Yordani Monegro laugh at him. That's going to be tough.
So
might just quit baseball.
Something to watch for too. But as far as I don't know if Derek, if you have the list open of like the top, like the signees from last year of guys who we might see in the DSL.
Well, Vladimir Asensio is one of them.
Yeah. He was the guy that signed the biggest bonus last year.
Yeah. You also have Carlos Carrasquel, Edwin Brito, Davinson Reyes, and then Anderson Fermin. Those are the guys who all signed for $400,000 or more. Asensio was the only one to sign for $600,000 or more. He signed for $1 million. Also, this guy's part of the 2023 signing class, but did not feature at all last year. Chan-Sol Lee, he signed, obviously, coming over from South Korea. He signed last summer in July for $300,000. That's a guy who's interesting, right-handed pitcher coming over from South Korea. And then I don't know if there's really anyone else. I did want to say, though, we have a new Master Bates as Adam Bates, right-handed pitcher, 18 years old out of Australia. Brad's going to like that one. So shout out, Brad. I know he likes that one. I don't know if he's going to be in the FCL. I'm assuming he's going to be in the FCL, I would assume. I don't know why they'd send a kid from Australia to the DSL, especially when he was signed last year. So Sox Prospects hasn't listed in the DSL, so that's another one that I figured I'd bring up as well. Cool name. A. Bates, close to Aaron Bates, who's like my favorite like random Red Sox player of all time. So maybe Adam Bates will have some good luck. Maybe he'll be a favorite of mine as well. So with that, perfect time to move on to Guess the Prospect. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. This prospect was an Oregon commit out of high school.
Okay.
This prospect bats lefty and throws righty, which is like the whole minor league system. So I don't know how much this is. Not actually. This prospect, so Oregon commit, bats left, throws right. Also is Rule 5 eligible after the 2025 season.
2025, okay.
Oregon commit. Okay. Is it Elmer Rodriguez Cruz?
It is.
Yes.
It is Elmer Rodriguez Cruz.
That was fast.
I remembered that he was supposed to go to Oregon out of Puerto Rico, and they decided, and he decided to sign with the Red Sox instead. Because Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who I'm never gonna mess up his name from now on, is like easily the highest that the Red Sox have taken a high school pitcher since like Jay Groom. So it was I do remember that he was like supposed to go to Oregon. So
yes, that was the thing. I didn't know if you would remember the Oregon part, but I'm like, I think that's I found it interesting. I figured, all right, it's going to Oregon. Cool, put that there. The other thing, my other hint clues were, you know, born on August 18, 2003, he's 20 years old, made his pro debut on Flag Day because the FCL opening day in 2022 was on June 14th, which is Flag Day, which I only remember from elementary school, which is a random thing to remember that Flag Day is June 14th, but there it is. He actually, according to Baseball America, there was 11 Sox draftees in his draft class ranked ahead of him, yet he received the fifth highest signing bonus. So that was an interesting hint, I guess. He's listed at 6'3", 160, so skinny. MLB ETA of 2027, according to Sox Prospects. Born in Puerto Rico, and then he was part of Salem's 2023 Big Three with Perales and Jackson Paez, obviously. So yeah, Jake gets another point. What's that? 3-1 now?
Yep.
3-1.
Widening my lead.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. He's got the sheet. Wow.
Yes, very, Hunter.
Very high end.
Hunter might get a bonus point for that at some point. Yes.
We'll that's see. Why I did it.
But no, that's a great place to side off for the episode. So for Hunter and Trenor O'Donnell's cousin, Jake O'Donnell. My name is Derek. Thanks for tuning in to the Pesky Report, and we will see you next time.